it's a sad reality that sometimes relationships end, and they can end in divorce, sometimes bitter acrimony. And that gets even worse when there are children involved. Now, we all know law is a massive part of how these things are resolved. But it's not just law. There is more to it. There's mindset and more. And that's what we're talking about today with my guest, Stephen Wade from Family Law Assistance.
You're listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show, helping you transform your deepest fears into your greatest strengths. Here's your host, Keith Blakemore Noble.
Hey, hey, hello. Welcome, welcome. Glad to have you back for another episode. Today, I am thrilled to be chatting with Stephen Wade. Now, Stephen has already experienced hostile, aggressive solicitors and threats of arrest while trying to remain a part of his child's life. And this is something which many people go through, and it's not talked as much as perhaps it ought to be. And we're going to be exploring that today, particularly with the emphasis on exploring it from the man's side of things. We'll look at the other side in another episode. Today, we're focusing it from the man's experience, which doesn't get talked about nearly as often as it ought. So Stephen's got a lot of experience about that. He had been disregarded from being part of the discussion when his son was moved 300 miles away and he could do nothing about it. He felt pushed out of being a parent and out of his son's life. So he fired his solicitors before the first hearing and chose to represent himself, doing so successfully. Not only was he empowered and proactive in his case, but he now has a meaningful relationship with his child. Stephen's a natural problem solver, and you will want this on your side in a court fight. Absolutely. He has worked in blue chip companies as an IT specialist and as a business analyst for a large American corporation. He has also helped separated parents for a Welsh-based parenting charity. He met his wife, Michaela, who supported him through the court hearings during his case. And he now assists people all over the country with all types of family law issues. All of these attributes also run through the ethos of Family Law Assistance, his and Michaela's company. And these skills have been transferred to their team members. That, in a nutshell, is my guest, Stephen. Hey, Stephen, how are you doing, sir?
Good morning, Keith. How are you?
I am fabulous, as always. Thanks. Fabulous, as always. You're calling in, speaking to us from Wales. I'm speaking from Scotland. It's great this week. We can meet up all over the country without having to leave our houses.
Yeah.
So we've heard your bio. We've heard your bio. But tell us, who is Stephen? Who is behind the bio?
Okay, well, basically, I'm a geek. in another life, I would probably be working in IT support, a career that I'd spent years doing. Originally, though, I'm a geology graduate. I spent 3 years at Kingston University studying geology. I was definitely up in your part of the world, Keith, up the west coast of Scotland, and looking at all the interesting geology on places like Skye and Arran, Scurry, Laxford, Ullapool, Torridon, Assint, all the way up there, right?
And, beautiful.
Field trips in the Atlas Mountains in Tunisia and in the Pyrenees. And to be honest, in my ideal world, I would have done a PhD digging up dinosaurs in America. I got off the place, but I couldn't get the funding. So, I ended up getting office work, and then I worked in the oil industry out of Aberdeen, and then I worked in Angola and the Congo. And as I, with my geeky side of stuff, I worked in IT, and that's where I was. I was working in IT and for about 15 years, and that's where my story starts. I was living in Bedford with my now ex-wife, a three-month-old son, and then one day I came home to an empty house. At the time, it felt completely out of the blue, and I was completely gobsmacked by an empty house and the feeling that plans were made behind my back. And I was completely, it was out of the blue. Do you know, now, with the benefit of hindsight, I think this is a man-woman thing. There were signs, but I hadn't seen them at the time. It took me years to realise that. And it's something that I've realised that with lots of my male clients, they say pretty much the same sort of stuff I did. So that's the setting the scene for it.
Gotcha. So, you've certainly been around the world. But I still love the idea of doing a PhD in digging up dinosaurs. That'd be so cool.
I actually spoke to the guy that I was going to be working under, offered the place. I just couldn't get funding for it. Rather than working, I got offered a place at the University of Wyoming in Laramie. And instead of doing that, I got a job as a stock control assistant on an industrial estate in South Essex. It was a bit of a come down.
Oh, the glamour.
It was, yes. It was definitely.
Yeah. So you come home one day and wife and child gone.
Yeah. And, you know, I fell into depression for the first time in my life.
Yeah.
I lost 1.5 stone in weight. I remember walking to Bedford Hospital with my heart beating in my chest, wondering if I was having a heart attack. I didn't want to drive because I thought I was going to crash the car. And it just turned out to be a panic attack. And I had various panic attacks. And I did what most guys probably going for that situation would have done. I tried to keep things on the road. I tried to keep things going. I was hoping that my now ex-wife was going to return home because she'd said to me it was a spur of the moment thing. It turned out not to be. She had left me for someone else. But but I'd been told it was a spur of the moment thing. So I thought, okay, well, I'm going to do the typical husband thing. So I'm going to keep the house running. I'll do a bit of DIY. I'll pay the bills. She'll calm down. She'll come home. I remember one time at work often I'd have panic attacks. And I would quietly get up from my desk and very, very, very carefully get up and walk out and hide around the back of the office, have my panic attack so no one could see me and hear me.
Yeah.
And I remember the one thing my boss said to me. He said, I know you're having a hard time, Stephen, but please try and cut down the number of breaks you're having.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And that was the thing as well, because by the time that the court case had started, I was already alive to the fact that if there was any mental health issues on my part, it would be used against me in court. Because you get disclosure of medical records in court hearings, and that would be used. Another reason to stop my son seeing me. So I struggled on. I didn't want to take antidepressants. I was suicidal at one point, but I just struggled on and just did it. I said I lost 1.5 stone in weight, and I just ploughed on in a cloud of depression.
Yeah. And you're right. That is such a male thing to do, isn't it? Just to, I guess, almost stubbornly plow on, not reach out for help, not talk with other people about it, and just head down, plow on, and hope for the best.
I think a lot of guys they see themselves as traditional masculinity, that they're the provider. They're the ones that got hold it together. There have been other times in my life where I've done exactly the same thing, and I think, to be honest, it's a bit of a bad rap that men can get at times, because I think that a lot of men, it's their natural instinct to want to be the strong one, to be the ones that get on with stuff. And I don't know, they're thinking, well, if my other half's having a breakdown, well, one of us has got to keep it together. And, I can't show weakness, and I want to be an inspiration. I want to be a symbol of strength and support and that. And when they do that, they risk being told that they're emotionless and not caring. Whereas I think men deal with things in a very different way to women very often.
Oh, yes. That's very, very true. Very true. And you're right. I guess that is, I've not seen it that way before. That's a good point. We spend so much time trying to be strong that rather than being recognized for being the strong one, keeping things going, we just get told, oh, you're emotionless and heartless. You've can't win, it seems, sometimes.
Yeah, it's be sensitive and man up.
So you're going through all of this, and there's the inevitable court case. I'd say inevitable. It's maybe it's something we can look at a bit more later, but is court always inevitable in such situations, or is it possible to find ways to resolve it without going through all of that?
as they say in a NLP, the person that controls the system, the most flexibility controls the system. Court is not inevitable if people want to avoid it badly enough. It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. It takes two to tango, though. And whilst you're indeed entirely responsible for your words and actions, you know, sometimes it's quite a binary thing, like seeing your children or not seeing your children. In my case, I'd basically been a really, really big part in my son's life from the day he was born to the day that I came home and found the house empty. And he stopped seeing me after the police was called on me. What happened is he was permitted to see me for an hour a week in a Tesco cafe with my ex-wife's parents. And there was no court order. There was no arrangements, really. And I said, OK, it's a beautiful day. It was a Good Friday, it was. It's a beautiful day. I'm going to take him for a walk in his pushchair. And I got body checked by my ex-father-in-law, who rang 999 and told the police that I had a court order to stop me seeing my son and I was trying to abduct my own son. And I threw up my hands and thought, this is bloody ridiculous. I was half expecting Jeremy Beadle to pop up with a microphone. Yeah. And instead, I sat down on the because it was a cafe, I sat down with my parents. They were there and we sat there and we heard the police sirens come in and we sat there, head in hands, and the police rushed in, three coppers, and one copper took my ex-father-in-law in one direction and the other two coppers took me in the other direction and said, okay, what's going on? And I explained the situation. And the police officer, she said to me, you sound like a very bitter man. And I said, all I wanted to do is see my bloody son. I said, it's as simple as that. I said, there's no court order. There's no reason. And they said, well, you can't do that because your in-laws will be distressed and it'll be a breach of the peace. And I said, well, I'm pretty distressed by not seeing my son. They said, well, we're not having it. If you do it, we'll arrest you. And after that, I didn't see my son at all. And I'd been told repeatedly, don't bother proposing mediation. It will never happen. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't want to go to court. I thought going to court is the worst of all options, you know, as an alternative. So I proposed mediation, it got turned down, so I was forced to make a court application. It was that or not see my son. That was the binary choice there.
Yeah.
But you know, even during those darkest days, there was actually a seed of hope there. You know, and it's something I didn't discover years back. It's something that Taz Thornton mentioned. You know, when you're at rock bottom, you've got a solid base to push up from.
That is a really good point. It's a really good one.
Up until that point, I thought, okay, well, what should I do? What's the best course of action? Should I give it more time because my ex-wife, she's just had a baby, she's hormonal, she's distressed. The last thing I want to do is go in wading in with my size 10s and make things worse and make a bad situation worse. Maybe she will calm down. Maybe we can put this behind us. But when that happened, I thought, okay, well, I've got nothing to lose. Nothing to lose at all. So at that point, I felt liberated and free to make the application. It wasn't a happy decision, but it was a liberating one.
Gotcha. I get you. So you're going to court, and you fire your solicitor. What led to that? In a nutshell, and perhaps more importantly, once you'd fired them, how did you find the will and the knowledge to successfully present your case in court? Because it must be a really scary thing to do.
It was the scariest thing in my life. It was even before or since, it's the scariest thing in my life. I remember saying to my solicitor, and she said to me, well, Mr. Wade, you can throw tens of thousands of pounds of it at it, but if your ex-wife doesn't want you to see your son, there's not a lot we can do. And the best case scenario, he will see you every other weekend.
Yeah.
And I think, no, I thought, okay, well, she's the expert. And I fired her after saying to her, okay, can you organise mediation, please? And she went, yes. And I waited, and I waited, and I waited. And we were 3 weeks down the line, and I phoned up to say, I just want to check, have you had any response about mediation? And they said, you've not instructed us to do so. And I went, we had a conversation 3 weeks ago. It's been 3 weeks, my son's not seen me, and nothing has happened. And I was speaking to a legal tech survey, and she said to me, no, we did tell you, Mr. Wade, and if you keep calling us, we'll just charge you every time you phone up. And I said, you're the experts here. I'm not. I said, I've got, I said, you think that, you seem to think that I've got an in-depth knowledge of family law. I said, you're the family law solicitors. I said, I said to, what were you proposing to actually break the impasse here? Nothing. We were waiting for your instructions. I went, okay, you're fired. So that's what I did. I joined various parenting forums. I'd found a charity, a parenting charity called Families Need Fathers, not to be confused with Fathers for Justice. They're a very different organisation. Yeah. I found someone who worked as a Mackenzie friend, which is a term which now is what is something I do. It's worth diverting at this stage to let you know what a Mackenzie friend is.
There was a
famous court case in London in the 1970s, known as Mackenzie versus Mackenzie, where an Australian barrister basically had been allowed to assist a friend without being a solicitor or a barrister. You've got a right, reasonable right to assistance in English and Welsh law. Scotland's slightly different, so we might come on to that. It's a bit different. But in England and Wales, you've got a right to reasonable assistance. A lay advisor, someone who is neither a solicitor or a barrister, who can quietly assist you in aspects of your case. There are limitations on what a Mackenzie friend can do. They cannot. They don't have automatic rights of audience to speak for you in court, and they cannot act as your agent or conduct a litigation. But we can do lots of the other stuff. We can help with paperwork. We can ask. We can provide quiet advice. We can explain what the process is. We can help with forms. And over the last 14 years, it's something where we've developed that we can help people with just about everything and every kind of case going, all the way up to the Royal Courts of Justice in London.
Gotcha. All right. So are you able to be physically present and consult in the court as well?
Yeah. So we take part in court hearings. In our virtual world, we take part in virtual court hearings. By the side of our client virtually, taking notes, advising them, what's going on, advising their options, discussing strategy. Do you know what? It's a pretty well established now that the principle that Mackenzie friends are a thing. Legal aid has dropped off even more, and Mackenzie friends have filled the gap. Now, when I say Mackenzie friends, it's worth remembering that there's a whole host of legal terms that people don't understand. So a lawyer in England and Wales is anyone that conducts law. So technically speaking, I'm a lawyer. I won't get in trouble for that. But on the other hand, if I called myself a solicitor or a barrister, it'd be a charge of impersonating the officer of the court, which carries a criminal sentence.
Ah, interesting. So a lawyer is just anyone who practices law, whereas a solicitor or a barrister is someone who they're registered, presumably, is it the Law Society or the courts they're registered with to say, yes, this person.
They're legally qualified and they're regulated and they're officers of the court. They've actually got a defined role within the court.
Right.
I mean, I could call myself a lawyer technically, but I think most people don't understand that term, so it's something I wouldn't do. And it's why I would call myself a family law specialist. It's got no legal law definition, and I'm always happy to explain the differences in conversations like this.
Yeah, interesting. That is interesting. So you're a Mackenzie friend now. Which means you help lots of people in the sorts of situations you were in. So when you'd fired your solicitor, did you found a Mackenzie friend?
I found someone to help me. Yeah, I found a Mackenzie friend to help me, and she helped me a great deal. Do things like work my way from seeing my son an hour a week in a contact centre. And progress on that. Contact centre, by the way, is it's a safe environment for children to see parents. You know, it's often a bit of a, I don't know, it's often like a default place for contact. If parents can't agree, it's only meant to be as a temporary measure. And because there were allegations of domestic violence and child abuse against me, that's the most the court would order. I did urge the court to take the allegations against me to trial, where I could be examined, under oath, to test them. But I was declined at every opportunity. I was faced with concerns and allegations, and I think the sheer injustice of it being, I felt like I was treated as a criminal. I remember my son at the contact centre, and about by this stage, about 4 or 5 months old, I remember sitting there with him, and I realised he needed changing. And I would obviously, I was fully prepared. I had the changing bag. I had everything I needed to change his nappy. And I picked him up, tucked him under my arm, started walking towards the change room. And I was stopped by one of the staff members saying, "Do you think that's appropriate?" And I went, "I'm sorry. Do you think it's appropriate?" I said, "My son needs changing. It's entirely appropriate." And she said, "I said, I'm going to go and change him." She said, "Are you sure you think that's appropriate?" I said, "What have I been? I said, what have I been found guilty of here? What have I done wrong?" And she goes, "I'm just trying to help." And I just march past it. And that's the sort of thing that happened on a regular basis. Now, don't get me wrong. Contact centres have definitely got their place. I see people that do belong in contact centres. I see an awful lot of people that don't. And it feels like a studied insult that you're not safe with your own children.
I can imagine.
I went to a variety of contact centres because various reasons. I went to various contact centres, and what typically happens and happened with me is you start off with an hour a week or an hour a fortnight at a contact centre, and you gradually increase. And if your goal is that your children stay overnight with you, you eventually get there for a schedule of increase in line with your children's needs, because you don't want to be going from zero to overnight in one step. I mean,
No.
Apparently the other way is fine, when you can go from being a full-time carer to not seeing your kids. Well, but hey, that's another issue.
Yeah.
So I gradually worked my way up from there, and we moved out the contact centre, and my son would be there for overnights. And I've been pushing for my son to be with me during the week. I just don't want to be a weekend dad, because I wanted my son to see me as an integral part of his life rather than that fun guy he goes to when he's off school to have fun.
Yeah.
And what happened then is, I remember at the court hearing, I was told, well, the court hearings were in Bedford. And I was told, well, that can't happen, Mr. Wade. Your son's being moved to Mid Wales. And I was shocked. I nearly fell off my chair.
Yeah.
And almost 300 miles away, my son is without advising, consulting, or even I was informed via my ex-wife's solicitor that my son was being moved to the other side of the country, somewhere that neither of us have any links at all. And it only took me a few seconds to say, okay, I'm moving too. So that's the next chapter of my life. I moved to Wales. I moved to the Welsh Valleys during the economic downturn of around 2008.
Not perfect time. So how are things with your son these days?
He's now 14 years old, and he's with me 40% of the time. He's he wasn't aware of the situation until recently, because I didn't want to burden him with this. I thought myself, I don't want him to have to side with his mother or father. It's old history in any case, and it's not his problem. So this is on my shoulders, and I always swore that when I become a father, I would do the best for my son, regardless of the circumstances. And it did actually, I did have to tell him a cut last year, actually, because what happened is communication between his mum and me is still non-existent. 14 years, she still refuses. Communication is via email or text. Let me tell you, after a decade of parenting via the medium of the written word, there were better ways to parent than that. He's missed out on opportunities. You lose a nuance in communication where it's caused problems that have threatened to send things off the deep end again. And it's only been because I know in the back of my mind, there's always the thought was, I really don't want to go back to court. That I've basically managed to wind things down, and I guess she has, as far as I can tell via the medium of the written word. But I think it came to a head because he almost missed a school trip because this keeps happening because of the poor communication, and he accused me of lying to him and refusing to pay for a school trip. And I sat down and said to him, "This is because of the poor communication between your mother and me. It's not your problem, but it has happened." And there was a court case for it, and it all came out.
Yeah. Wow.
It's an unfortunate situation. It would be the one thing I can remedy. But I know in law, You cannot order someone to communicate, and never mind the law. You know, when it comes to reality, you can't make someone communicate.
No, well, that's true.
You just have to work with what you've got.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we've seen how you've navigated through this absolute minefield, got to where you are, and still have a relationship with your son, which is amazing. Long may that continue. So we've seen the legal side of things. Just for this last bit, let's touch on the mindset. I mean, how do you manage to get through that sort of thing without just crumbling and collapsing? We mentioned earlier that mindset is part of what gets people through this. What can people do if somebody's going through this situation? What sorts of things can they do just to kind of strengthen their mindset a bit, just to give them enough to be able to find a way to get through this?
Yeah, I think the number one thing is to have a clear goal. It's been said before, and I'll confess to it, I am on the determined or stubborn side, depending on how you see things. So a very clear goal, a clear, unshakable goal. People say to me that, it must have been very hard what I faced. No, it was the easiest thing in the world. At every step of the way, I asked myself, is what I'm doing or is what I'm saying going to help me achieve my goal, or is it going to hinder it? It made me bite my tongue when I'm urged to give people the benefit of my not-so-humble opinion. When it came to freezing in mid-Wales because we couldn't afford heating, I knew what I was doing it for. You know, the thing that scared me the most, it was the prospect of having to explain to my son years down the line why he wasn't worth me doing anything I could for him. You know, that was what scared me most. It wasn't the attitude of judges. It wasn't the attitude of my ex-wife or a solicitor or anyone else I met throughout this process. It was my son. I thought, I owe him, you know, everything I can to be part of his life. You know, I wanted a clear conscience, and I've got a clear conscience.
Nice. So biggest thing is have a clear goal. Know what you want and why you're doing it, so that everything you do is then shaped by that goal, which means... Sorry, go on.
People know deep down what it is they want, and if they don't, they can sit there and chunk up. They can sit there and work out what's the most important thing to them. I get people sometimes say to me, my ex-wife has moved my son 300 miles across the country. And I say, okay, well, move then.
Yes.
And they will say, I can't do that. I've got my job here. I've got my friends here. I've got my family here. And, to be...
Which is more important?
What's more important? You're going to do the most important thing to you. And I'm not going to condemn people for their choices, because people are free to make their own choices and live with their own consequences. And people have got to be true to themselves. But for me, my son being in my life was the most important thing, which meant it was an easy thing. I think if I'd have given up on him or stayed in Bedford because that's where my job was, I'd probably be regretting it right at this very moment.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I guess there's a saying which I guess is so true, and that highlights it. If you want something, you'll find a way. If you don't really want it, you'll find an excuse.
Yeah, and you know, and during this journey, I lost my business. I had a business in the southeast of England. I lost that. Mm-hmm. I was bankrupted, literally, as in going to a court hearing for bankruptcy. I lost a house that I owned. I froze to death that winter. I almost lost Michaela several times through that as well. I remember at least once she dumped me just after yet another court hearing because she was sick of it. Yeah. I remember sitting on the street in Brecon in the mountains, you know, crying because I'd gone through a horrible court case and Michaela had just dumped me again. The real thing, the biggie between me and Michaela is the stress of it damaged my fertility to the extent that I can't father children.
And, goodness! Yeah,
Michaela and myself, we went through fertility treatment, and it failed because of that. Oh. So that's caused one or two issues. Although we've not given up on that, there's stuff we're working on, because now the thing for my son is over. The second goal is to have a child. So now that's what we want more than anything else.
Gosh, well, best of luck with that. Best of luck. I know that there's always developments in that area, so fingers crossed something comes through for you on that. And I've no doubt the two of you will make awesome parents to whichever whatever child comes along as a result of that.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your journey with us, Stephen, and for sharing with us that it's not just the legal side, it is the mindset side. And as you say, the most important thing is have a goal. Know why you're doing it. What's the important thing to you? Because then everything else kind of slots into place, and even the biggest challenges become smaller because there's a greater purpose on the other side. And in your case, it was, I want to be part of my son's life.
Definitely.
Nice. So, Stephen, if people want to find out more about you, or maybe get in touch with you, or find out about how you can help them in similar situations, what's the best way for them to find out more?
Okay, well, our website is at familylawassistance.co.uk. But you know what? All you've got to do is Google Family Law Assistance and you'll find us somehow.
Brilliant. So that's familylawassistance.co.uk, the website. Or as he says, just Google Family Law Assistance. Stephen and his company are all across the socials. All his links to all his social media and so on, they're all in the show notes in the usual place, keithblakemorenoble.com/show. Find this episode, the one with Stephen Wade, and you'll get all of his show notes and contact details there. Or just look for Family Law Assistance on the internet. You'll find him. Stephen, thank you so much for taking time to be with us. I've found it a really interesting conversation, so thank you for that. Thank you, dear listener and dear viewer, for catching us. Remember, if you like this, hit subscribe, hit like, share it, comment, share this episode and other episodes far and wide. And we'll catch you in the next episode. And in the meantime, I'll leave you with one of Stephen's favorite quotes. It's from JFK, all about when he announced they were going to go to the moon. And he said, "We choose to go to the moon and do these other things, not because they're easy, but because they are hard."
You've been listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show, helping you transform your deepest fears into your greatest strengths. To find out more, please visit keithblakemorenoble.com.